to Recurring Nightmares, episode 21. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
And we're kicking off the year with our first horror-adjacent episode, a couple of prison exploitation films, which this was my choice this time, and I apologize in advance. But first, we're, you know, as we always do at the top, talk about what we've been watching. Chris, I know you saw The Matrix Resurrections, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
The
long awaited. I don't know if that's I don't know
long,
if anybody was
long time coming.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody was clamoring for a new Matrix movie, but it's here. Fourth Matrix movie, directed by Lana Wachowski, who she was co-director on the original trilogy. Brings back Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, a couple other people from the original films as well. Jada Pinkett Smith redoes her role as Niobe. A couple other people. Some new characters as well. I don't know. This is like, I liked it. Like, I'll put that out there. I enjoyed the movie, but if you are going into The Matrix Resurrections looking for what The Matrix is generally kind of known for, which is like flashy, genre defining action scenes, this doesn't have it.
No, I watched this as well, and I think that was a problem with the movie,
I like the concept. Yeah, I like a lot of the themes they're talking about. I liked the dialogue. I liked how they frame stuff, but like then I keep waiting for that set piece.
And
there's a couple set pieces, but they're not amazing. They're weak.
I think. Well, you had really good martial arts in like the and that's kind of not here.
Yeah, it's kind of missing.
There's a cool kind of like chase action scene near the end, I thought, like, and you got these people that are like jumping out of buildings trying to like attack them.
That yeah, I do like
neat
that
idea.
I like that idea of basically like Wachowski kind of took on a form of zombies and added it here, where you can take over people in the Matrix and rewrite their code so they'll do whatever you want.
I saw people on Twitter mad about that. I thought one of the cool things about the movie was like these, what they call them, bot bombs or something. I saw someone on Twitter mad about it because it reminded them of 9/11. Like, okay.
People jumping out of the buildings during the chase. Yeah. I guess are we going to say that anytime somebody jumps out of a skyscraper?
I don't know. For me, I guess I kind of agree with you that like the story was pretty decent. I think the movie had a high bar to clear for me because I don't like the sequels to The Matrix. I was happy with just The Matrix and don't see why this had to come back. We had like a group chat going on the side right before we started here where I was just saying like I'm sick of franchises in general. So to bring this back, it would have had to have been pretty clever and exciting. And to me, it was not like, I don't know. It almost passed that. It almost cleared that bar because like,
I thought it was clever. It's just not exciting. Like,
yeah, it's not exciting. That's for sure. And
it is a bit of, it's funny because like, you know, talking about franchises and such, there's like a whole subplot in there. So like, so basically the Matrix itself, the original trilogy is recreated in this, but it is in world that stuff happened, but it all happened in a video game. Or at least that's how it's meant to be. And so like they're coming, hey, we're going to resurrect the Matrix, this game that you guys made. And so they go into like, there's a good, 10-15 minutes in the beginning piece that kind of like is a examination of sequels, corporate franchises in general, how, you know, they're taken away from their creators, and how, like, whether the creator wants to do it or not, they're going to do it. So you either jump on board or you let them do whatever you want with your baby. So,
yeah. And, you know, so there's interesting ideas in here. But like, part of it for me is just like, just pointing that out doesn't make it like, okay. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just like, yeah, you're saying exactly what I'm thinking, but, you know, I get it. And, you know, and she kind of makes the point that they were going to make this with or without her. And so she might as well, try to make it at least, you know,
somewhat original and not be devoid of like creativity. And
yeah.
I mean, they could have really, like, hey, we're just going to redo the Matrix, right? We're not getting Keanu Reeves back. We're not getting Carrie Ann Moss back. We're just doing the Matrix again. Which,
a lot of the movie felt like that to me.
Yeah, it is like, oh, we have to bust Neo out of, we have to get Neo, you know, he has to you know, be able to break out. And then they add on the second layer of having to do so with Trinity as well. Yeah. I mean, I didn't love it, but I did like it. I don't know if it's one. Like, I like the first two movies. I think the action in it is still very good. It's fun to watch. The freeway sequence in the second film, I think, is still phenomenal. And there's some really good fight sequences in both of those. This doesn't have that, so I'm not really sure, like, I want to go back to it ever again, but...
Yeah. Well, that's kind of where I landed. It was like, I didn't hate it, but I don't see me watching this again. Like, if I want to watch The Matrix, I'd probably just watch the first one.
Put the first one on.
The freeway thing in the second one is cool, but, like, I think that... I'm holding firm. I know everyone has reassessed these, and... I don't know. I don't like the sequels. Like, I don't even like the second one. I think the third one is much worse, but I.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, we watched them a couple years ago. Actually, yeah. And, like, and I came out, like, I did come out going, like, look, I still don't think 3 is particularly good, but, like, I came out going, all right, like, I don't hate it, like, kind of like I did when it first came out. And you've stuck firm.
I think they're not good. I really think that by the end of the first Matrix, the first Matrix 1 has lots of amazing, kind of groundbreaking action in it. But it also had a lot of, like, really cool philosophical ideas and this really cool high concept. And I felt by the end of that first movie, anything interesting that there was to say had kind of been said. And then you get into this gobbledygook in the sequels where it's just like shit I don't care about and it's confusing. And I think that this one was a little better in that the story, there's all these like layers, but the story was kind of more straightforward of him just trying to wake up Trinity. And
you don't have to like deal with, because a lot of what the second and third one is. And the
fucking...
Yeah, it's all like, you know, wording for.
Yeah,
you know, layers of coding, and like they got a little too kitschy with it with the sequels.
And this is, you know, at its core, it's like a more human story, and you have that like coupled with like kind of some of the interesting ideas around corporate filmmaking and this and that. But again, it's like didn't knock my socks off, and so I'm not gonna. Go to bat for it. I understand people that like it. You know, it's totally cool. I mean, it is more interesting than a lot of shit that gets put out, I guess. But just for me, it was whatever. I think I've moved on. Sure. Have you seen anything else you wanted to touch on?
I guess like sticking with these franchises. Briefly touch on the Book of Boba Fett, which I watched the first episode of.
I'm further than you in it.
Yeah, you've now seen two. I don't know. Like, and you know, you referenced our kind of like group chat that we had going on. We were talking about it there. I just don't know what the purpose this brings. Like, I'm gonna watch it. It's Star Wars. Like, I watch Star Wars shit. I like, yeah. So this is what I've been kind of always wanting out of it, like, because I enjoy being in that world. But that first episode is like, the more I think about it, the more it's like, it's rough. Like, there's nothing going on. It doesn't set up why it even needs to exist. Like,
yeah, to me, like I said in the group chat, it's diluting the Mandalorian, because it feels very much like the Mandalorian. Like, and it's just like, so, you know, you get the Mandalorian once a year or whatever, and you get those six episodes, and it feels pretty special. And it's just like, this is, here's more filler between, here's a show that feels a lot like that. And on top of it, I feel like the Mandalorian, you didn't have to bring a ton of Star Wars knowledge to. And here it's like, it starts off with him crawling out of the Sarlacc pit and stuff. And it's like, if you didn't know, again, if you didn't know, you probably wouldn't be watching these. But like,
if you haven't seen Return of the Jedi, like, you're not watching
the Mandalorian. I guess, but like, you know, my girlfriend Melissa like went into Mandalorian. She's not a Star Wars fan. You know, she'd maybe seen those movies, but you didn't really need to know much. Like, if you knew shit, yeah, you'd catch little things. But and it gave you like a hook right away. Like, okay, there's this baby he has to protect, and here it's just like,
yeah, why do we care about Boba Fett, like, and at all? Like, why do?
And that's, it looks a question like,
I've been asking for years.
Well, that was my other thing. Like, I'm sitting there, we're watching this. I'm like, every fucking 2-bit character has to have its own fucking spinoff show now. And my girlfriend's just like, why are you so grumpy? But it's just, I don't know. As far as I can tell, it looks like he's in charge of whatever the fuck Jabba the Hutt was in charge of.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, at the end of Mandalorian season 2, he walks in to Jabba's palace. He kills Bib Fortuna, who is
right,
guy, and takes over the palace. And now this one is like showing him starting to establish himself as the crime lord. But it's also like, who gives a shit about like the crime lord on a backwater planet?
Yeah. And I thought, I guess I forgot that happening in The Mandalorian. I thought this show was going to show us how he became, you know, the new crime lord. But, like, because it keeps now flashing back to him waking up after the Sarlacc pit, and he's taken in by Tusken Raiders, and it's like, he's gaining, you know, some sort of position with them, and it's like, okay, it's going to all be building up to how he got here, but I guess we already saw how he got here. Again, yeah. It seems like a real, like, we're, like, answering shit we don't need to, like,
I mean, there's definitely that. There's also a contingent of fans that have, I mean, they love Boba Fett for whatever reason.
I mean, he's cool looking. Like, that was the thing when we were kids. Like, it was like, oh, who's this guy with this, like, fucking jetpack and shit? Like,
but then he's, like, dispatched by Han. Like, and at blind Han at that, right? Like, he's just accidentally knocked off. He flies into Jabba's skiff and then into the Sarlacc pit. Like, he's non. He has no meaning.
It's like, again, like, I think it's cooler that he's just like, he doesn't even have a line of dialogue, does he? Like,
he has like a few lines, like, you know, where he says like no disintegrations, or Vader says no disintegrations, and you know, he has some dialogue.
I just thought it's cooler that there was this mysterious figure that you knew nothing about, and he got his fucking ass kicked right away. And just like, I don't know, why does everything need a fucking backstory and all this shit? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely something people have been, a certain contingent of Star Wars fans have been clamoring to see how he survived. They, like, I mean, there's been stories. They brought him back in the novels that are not, you know, considered part of anything anymore. But, like, it's something that these fans have, like, really wanted. I just think it's weird that we're giving him, like, a 6-episode arc or 8-episode arc or whatever the hell this is. Like, it seems very weird.
I wonder how popular this is, and who knows, but to me, it was like, it's okay so far, but it's not, I don't know. Mandalorian felt like really special and like surprising, and this is just kind of I don't know.
It's not. I didn't feel any like this is cool. Like it's like all right. Like guess we're back on Tatooine.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you'll dig. There's fun action in the second episode, but again, I just.
Which is a step up from that first episode, so maybe I'll like it a little bit more.
Maybe,
but yeah, that's where I'm at. I haven't really watched. I mean, a bunch of Christmas movies, but
yeah,
that's about it.
I've seen a bunch of stuff. We're not going to touch on nearly all of it, but you know, I'll touch on a few things briefly. One thing I wanted to throw out there is that Wrath of Man movie, the Guy Ritchie movie with starring Jason Statham.
Mm-hmm.
I thought was really fun, and I was kind of surprised at what exactly the plot of that turned out to be. I mean, based on the trailer I got, it was like, okay, this guy's like a armored car guard, but there's more to him, you know, and that's part of it. Like, you know, because in the trailer you see like they try to get. Basically, he gets robbed on the job, and he like handles himself very well. And they're like, "Oh, this guy is a fucking guy," but you know that's part of it. But it's also like a heist movie too, and you get you know it goes into detail on the heist that's going on. And I thought really fun heist movie. I'm not a Guy Ritchie fan, but I liked it quite a bit. Very entertaining rental, I thought. So that's one. Heist. I saw The Card Counter, the new Paul Schrader film. Paul Schrader, who we covered back in our Cat People episode.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his movies are not like Cat People. I mean, most of them are pretty horny, but they're usually like these God's Lonely Man movies, where it's like this lonely, troubled, brooding man who like keeps a journal and slowly. Builds towards some sort of like horrible action that they're gonna do or not. Card Counter is another one of those. It's Oscar Isaac as his lonely man in this one. He's the card counter. Not really a gambling movie though. I mean, there is gambling in it, and I think the gambling is well done. Like it's interesting. Trader does a really good job of explaining how card counting works. But it's really about a guy dealing with the past and dealing with something horrible he did in his past. And kind of about how, like, the horrible things that happen, it's like the people at the top never have to deal with the consequences. It's people on the bottom. Kind of all of those things. I thought The Card Counter was really good. Isaac is great in it. I thought Tiffany Haddish was surprisingly good in it. It's a good movie. I liked it. I liked it more than even his last movie, which everyone seems to love, First Reformed. I liked this one more.
Okay.
Benedetta, the new Paul Verhoeven movie.
Yep.
The lesbian nun movie. It was a lot of fun. I guess I'll leave it at that. Just to be short. It's fun. You know, it does have pretty exciting sex scenes in it, but also, you know, violence and a fun story. Not sure the point it was really trying to make, but it was fun. It's very fun. Another good rental for you if you haven't seen it yet. I guess I'll touch on, you know, one thing I've been really into lately, and I think it was One Cut of the Dead that set it off for me. Is really truly independent movies made by people who have no access to anything. Kind of like that.
You talk them like iPhone, and that's your camera, and that's
Even so, that, or you know, there's throughout time, there's been you know, one of the great, I think we're both a fan of, is Kevin Smith. And his first film, Clerks, was total do-it-yourself job, you know. He, like, took out a bunch of credit cards, and, you know, he made this movie for no money. He made it with his friends. And it's something that ever since, I think One Cut of the Dead was featured on Joe Bob, and Joe Bob gave this speech about, you know, anyone could be a filmmaker. And looking at some of the stuff that Joe Bob features on his show, I think that's a point he's trying to make. I've had a growing interest in these types of movies. So, one of them I saw this month was a movie called Miami Connection, which is like a famously bad movie at this point. It was kind of rediscovered, I think around 2012. It was like a movie that came out in the late 80s that actually did come out, and it was, you know, this guy who was like a taekwondo instructor in Florida somehow got this movie made, and nobody gave a shit about it then. And it's kind of taken on life as like a cult film now, as, you know, like one of these so bad it's good movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so bad it's good. I actually think it's genuinely kind of good. The plot is, I don't know, it's like this, there's a band of guys who are super into taekwondo, and they end up butting heads with another band, and that other band hires cocaine ninjas to take them down, and it's the plot's stupid, but
cocaine, it's fun, ninjas.
Yeah. It's like ninjas who, you know, are like coke dealers, or I don't know, dude. It's ridiculous. But it's a lot of fun. Part of it is a lot of fun because it's like amateur filmmaking. Like, you get like these, like, there's a moment where this like emotional moment comes out of nowhere, and this actor who is, you know, some nobody, like trying to like really sell it, and it's just kind of comical how hard he goes for like the emotion. But I think there is a general like sweet like bro vibe to the movie, like these, just like this group of guys who are like, they just want to get through college and play in their band, and I don't know. I think there's something to the movie. I do think that the martial arts in it is kind of legit, which makes sense because the guy that made it knows martial arts. So.
Right.
That's a fun one. Like, again, it's got like a bit of a reputation now, so it's not like something I discovered, but I think it got discovered for a reason. It's fun. And I two more real quick, and then we'll get into our features here. But I brought up Vinegar Syndrome last month, and, you know, they're like a boutique Blu-ray company, mm-hmm. but their big thing is film preservation. And so, you know, a lot of stuff they highlight is kind of these really small things. On their Black Friday sale, I bought something called, it's like a box set called Homegrown Horrors Volume 1 that they put out last year. And it's three, again, really small independent movies. Kind of, they're like regional, you know, like if you grew up in Ohio, you may have heard of this movie, but no one really outside there heard of them. Three movies like that. And I've watched two out of the three so far. I think they're pretty interesting. Again, these are crappy movies, but I think there's some value there. I had a lot of fun with one called Winter Beast. Just had crazy, like, the guy made it over the course of a decade, and it's got like crazy like stop motion animation going on, like creatures running around, like and then there's another one I watched today called Beyond Dream's Door, which is like this guy who has been repressing his dreams, and now his dreams are coming out to get him. I think kind of like Nightmare on Elm Street-ish, but with okay. no budget. Beyond Dream's Door is like strangely ambitious for clearly having like no budget or anything. Like, it's kind of amazing that, like, I don't know, it almost feels like a real movie. But anyways, if any of these sound interesting, they're actually all, I think, got added to Shudder this week.
Oh, nice.
So at first I was upset that I bought this box set, because I bought it and then they announced the movies on, you know, Shudder for January, and all three of these movies are coming to Shudder. I'm like, I just spent like $40 on all these shitty movies. When they're all coming to Shudder, I could have just watched them for free. But I'm actually kind of glad I got it now, because I think they're pretty cool. But so What are the three names? Fatal Exam, Beyond Dream's Door, and Winter Beast. I think they're all on Shudder now, so you can check them out. Nice. I recommend it. Lastly, Vinegar Syndrome put out a brand new movie last year called New York Ninja. Really interesting story behind that one is that it was like shot in the mid 80s, like in 85, and just kind of abandoned. I guess they ran out of funding. I don't know, but Vinegar Syndrome acquired them as part of a larger sale. You know, they're just buying a bunch of shit. They've found these film canisters, like, what the hell is this? And, you know, like, this is interesting. There's no way they were going to throw it out because they're film preservationists. But they're like, can we do something with this? There's no sound. They don't have a script. I don't know where the director is now. I think he's still alive, but he just kind of, like, disappeared. So it's like literally just a bunch of raw footage with no sound. And they cut it together. They wrote their own script. They hired voice actors to do the voices. And now we have a movie called New York Ninja, which was like 90% completed, but really that 10% that they had to do was a lot of work. It's not super remarkable, surprisingly. But it's just, for one, like, the story behind it is so interesting. And you do get, like, all that stuff on the disc. You can watch a documentary about them making it. So I think it's worth it almost just for the story behind it. But it's if I just, like, showed this to you and did not tell you the whole story, you would almost believe that this was something that came out back then, which is kind of a feat in and of itself. So,
yeah,
interesting. Nothing amazing. Then again, you know, it's not like Miami Connection is amazing or Homegrown Horrors, but I have a fascination with this stuff lately, and I'm sure that will get explored in future episodes.
That one's only available on Blu-ray, or
that is only available, as far as I know, it's only available that way. So, and it's pretty expensive. Like, I can't, like, recommend it. But if it, like, let's say it did get added to Shudder, give it a watch. It's interesting. It, you know, they almost made it a thing, and it's not terrible, but it's nothing amazing.
Nice.
All right. So we're here to discuss two prison exploitation films. We're going to go in chronological order, and we're going to start with Caged Heat.
Prison as a place of punishment.
Caged Heat. Enter the female jungle of women's prison, USA. A seething hell of steel and stone where bodies behind bars ache with hunger for a man. Any man. Where caged passions ignite in carnal confinement and explode into violence.
This was written and directed by Jonathan Demme. Came out in 1974. That's about as specific a date as I could give you. Had a budget of $180,000. I don't know what box office it did, but I think it was successful for what it was. The women in prison film, which is kind of, you know, this is kind of right in the middle of that era that it was a popular genre.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about it, but it must have been popular at some point. This, I think, came later in that genre's, like, heyday, because this got recognized as being, like, more progressive than most women in prison films, which, I don't know what to say. We'll get into it, but anyways, it on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 73%. On IMDb, it has a 5.3.
That seems more fitting.
Yeah, I would. But, simple story, I guess. This, we start off with, like, it's like a drug bust type thing going on. I think drug bust.
Yeah, there's some sort of, no, weren't they, I thought they were robbing something and they were escaping. But yeah, it could have been that. I don't know. Everything kind of blends together. But yeah, they're doing a bust of something.
basically some cops are gonna bust some robbers then, right? And if I remember this correctly, there's like a foot chase and a shootout and stuff.
The two guys get away.
Yeah, but the girl gets caught by the cops. The girl's name is Jacqueline Wilson. She's played by Erica Gavin. She gets caught by police and she's charged with accessory assault of a police officer. She gets thrown in prison. The judge like kind of throws the book at her for not giving up her partners and whatnot. And then we get prison shenanigans. And I think it becomes clear what the appeal of this genre was at the time, because it's a lot of just tits. I mean, you know, the girls are getting strip searched on their way in. You get to see boobs. There's a part where, like, there's like a mean girl in the prison who, like, is looking for cigarettes and just rips another girl's top off, and we get more boobs. Get some weird dream sequences. It takes a while.
Those sequences are so fucking strange.
Yeah, there's like one right at the beginning with a giant knife, like a comically large knife. I think our main character is having that dream.
Yeah.
But I think it takes a while for any sort of plot to get going. And even then, it's kind of hard to tell. Like, what? It's not very cohesive. But yeah, basically, I guess at one point we get the warden gets introduced, and she's a woman in a wheelchair, which I guess was one of the spins on the genre that normally it would be like a male warden. She gives off like strong Nurse Ratched vibes from, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I don't think that this warden is very well fleshed out. They don't do enough work to make you hate her. I don't know.
She's just kind of like, oh, she kind of appears and she's portrayed as the mean one. Yeah. And that's it. Like, we're not really ever given any reason to like dislike her. And I think comparatively to the other film that we're going to talk about, like that warden is given some space to, you know, for you to not like him.
Sure.
She's just not. She's nothing. She's not even really a character.
There's not much to her. Like, and when you're introduced to her, it really is like they're trying to do the Nurse Ratched thing. Like, she's this cold, steely, you know, uncaring person. But like when you first meet her, I think she's rolled into like they're doing the prisoners are putting on like a sketch comedy show, and you can tell she's upset by like the sexual humor going on in the show. And you're like, oh, she's gonna fuck with them. But as the movie goes on, it becomes like, it's weird because she's set up obviously as like this villain, but it's very much more so this doctor that she has working at the prison who is so really weird. Awful.
There's like subplots that make no sense, and yeah, this Dr. Randolph guy is a fucking weird creeper.
He's the villain, I'd say, like way more than her. Yes. Like, she's not good, and you're supposed to not like her, but I just don't think they do enough work to make you hate her. More boobs. Like, a girl gets thrown in solitary confinement, and of course they throw them naked into solitary confinement. I saw you said like the prison, the Red Leaf Prison, in the next film we're going to talk about was unrealistic. I'm like, yeah, this one doesn't seem realistic either. Though. Yeah.
The whole thing about this is completely unrealistic, though, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, not to skip ahead too much, but there's not a whole lot going on. And then they're doing, you know, they make prisoners do, like, farm work and shit. Like, they're out working outside in the country. And it's like our main girl and the mean girl kind of like team up. They like attack a guard while they're working on this farm, and then they steal a prison truck. And they get away. And so like then you have like two plots going where it's like the girl's on the run, like kind of our main character and her sidekick or whatever.
Yep.
And then you have like the fucked up shit going on at the prison. And I was just like, what is this? Most of the time, like, well, first off, most of the time, I'm really bored because like this movie looks like shit and sounds like shit. And I don't think that all that is entirely the movie's fault. I think part of it is I watched it on Pluto. I don't know about you.
I watched it on Amazon. I had rented it.
You rented it. Was it in widescreen?
No.
Okay.
Was it
in HD?
I mean, if it was, it still looked like shit, so.
Yeah, it looked like shit. So I watched it on Pluto. It's in, like, the old, like, aspect, like, TV aspect ratio. Yeah,
it's, like, in a 4:3.
But if you look up on Wikipedia, it's supposed to be 1:1.85, which is a widescreen aspect ratio. So I'm like,
I wonder if like the original
just got the print,
yeah, the original print gone, and yeah, whatever they transferred to VHS or Betamax back in like the late 70s, early 80s, might be all that survived.
And the sound is bad. Hard to make out what people are saying. It's like quiet. It's like muted. And I think that, I don't think there's any point where I would like this movie, but I think that this movie deserves or needs a little more love because the presentation that you and I got is shitty.
Not great.
Yeah. Like it's doing nothing to help it. And, you know, I could see maybe having a slightly different opinion about this if it looked better, if I could hear what was going on, if it was like a cleaned up transfer of it. And this is not what we're getting. Like this movie's clearly not gotten a lot of love over the years. Anyway, so the girls are out on the run. And meanwhile, back at the prison, the doctor is like, the doctor kind of emerges as the villain here. And he's like, wanting to do experiments. I think wanting to just do lobotomies. I don't know. I don't know if he wants to do like fucked up experiments or if he just wants to do lobotomies so he can have vegetables that he could rape.
Either one is plausible.
Yeah, maybe both, but they basically, like, he convinces this blonde girl who they say killed somebody, but I must have missed when she did that.
She admits that she killed somebody. Like, they have, like, there's a couple pieces where they kind of reveal what they had all done, and she says that she had killed someone.
Is she the same girl that was, like, running through the vents through the whole first half of the movie and stealing food?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that's another point I missed. Like, again, early on, it's just kind of weird shenanigans. Like, this one girl is, like, unscrews a vent in the bathroom, and I thought she was trying to escape, but she literally was just going to, like, the staff break room and stealing their food.
Yeah.
And then, like, giving it to the people, like, the women in solitary. Anyways, he's got this blonde girl, and he gets her to sign a form to give her a lobotomy, and he basically does this by telling her that, like, she'll get paroled.
Yes.
He drugs her, he kisses her, he's, like, taking pictures of her, he's undressing her. It's really... I don't... Yeah, I mean, and I'm no, like, you know, I'm not like a pearl clutcher here, but it's just kind of, it's weird to me. Like, the appeal of these movies, you got to remember it was a different time, but like the fact that like right now I could go on Pornhub and just watch porn or watch whatever I want, I would never ever want to watch any of this. It's like you're showing boobs and stuff, but it's like in these situations that are not a turn on to me. Like, it's...
No, not at all. Like, and that's what I found weird about this, because I've heard so much about Caged Heat prior to us watching it. And I have seen some women in prison films, and, you know, they all have the obligatory, you know, strip, like, search at the beginning.
Kind of the point of it is it's boob show. Like, kind of like, you know, yeah, slashers, you're getting the boobs.
And it's generally like, you're going to have, like, the prisoners getting it on together, and there's some, like, titillating scenes, like, sex scenes or whatever. Maybe the guards, like, yeah, they're in a position of power, but, you know, it's never positioned as them, like, forcibly raping, you know, the inmates. I don't know. Like, this
kind of is. Yeah.
Here, definitely is. But the other ones I've seen, it's like, you know, the women are doing it to get some sort of power over the guards. In this one, like, she has no power. She's been drugged.
Yeah.
Basically just being molested in a drugged state. And it's kind of, I mean, it's more than kind of gross. It's really gross.
Meanwhile, the girls on the run, I think they, like, rob a bank, right?
Yep.
But then there's, like, a simultaneous, I think, bank robbery that happens. It's super confusing.
I didn't know if, like, they had, you know, if they knew that this other robbery was going to go down, so they like went
super kinda, convenient.
Yeah, it just seemed really weird.
it's kind of confusing, but there's, like, a second bank robbery that happens at the same time. These guys wearing Disney masks, which is kind of like one of the more interesting visual things about the movie. But it's weird. Like, they rob a bank, they could, like, keep running, and then for whatever reason, they decide that they have to go back and help the women at the prison. I don't know what makes them decide to do that. It's been a few weeks now since I've seen this, and I did not find it super memorable.
Yeah, I didn't really get why they wanted to go back. Like, it didn't make sense to me. Like, you don't go back to prison. You don't break back into the prison you just broke out of to bust some more people out. Like, that's just not how things work.
But by this, like, late point in the movie, I'm kind of invested in seeing the doctor get his comeuppance. Yeah. They come back to the prison. They take the warden and the doctor hostage, and then they bust out some of the girls, and they try getting out of there, and they get stopped by the cops. There's a shootout.
Yeah,
it's kind of the end of the movie, right? Like, they in the back of the truck that they bust the people out in, like, they have, like, the warden and the doctor, and they both get shot by the cops, I think. And
yeah, which is slightly unsatisfying.
Yeah. I mean, I was happy to see them go, I guess, but it's a very kind of like, it just ends. Like, they get in a shootout with the police. Them two are shot in the back of the truck, and the girls get into, like, another car, I think, and they get away. And then, like, it just, like, credits just start rolling right as that's happening. It's like, okay, I don't know. I think one other thing I wanted to touch on is the music in this movie, when there is music, is terrible, in my opinion. Like, it's to me, I kept thinking of Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, like the music that would play during that. Sure. Or like something that you would hear in line for, like, the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. And I don't know, it's like this fun, kind of weird, adventurous, like,
it doesn't really fit this music. Type it doesn't of film.
Fit what's going on. Yeah, like, literally, it sounded like, have you ever seen Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown?
Yeah,
where you, like, yeah, like, watch that. And it's like, I'm telling you, the music sounds very similar to that. I already touched on, I think that some of this movie needs a quality restoration. But even if still, I didn't care for this movie. I don't know about you.
No, I did not like it. I think, like, here's the thing, like, you know, there's a lot of problems with it, as you said. Like, sound is awful. The video, the production of it's awful. The way it looks is not great. The acting is terrible. You know, everything about it is kind of bad. But then, like, worse off is it's boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's just dull. And I think that, more than anything, is, like, its biggest sin here. It's just, like, it's not, like, there's nothing, no reason for you to, like, want to get attached to these women other than maybe their nipples. And, like, it, and, like, hey, you know, maybe, you know, what is this? This film is almost 50 years old now. Maybe 50 years ago, that was all you needed. But as you said, like, you can look at better looking nipples on Pornhub with people that filmed, like, shit on their phone.
You could, so. I mean, it's rare nowadays, but, you know, if you want to see a sexy movie, they still make them here and there.
Yeah.
Way sexier than this. I talked about one this episode, Benedetta. Really great sex scenes. One of my favorite movies of last year, The Voyeurs, had some really hot sex scenes. You know, so if you're looking, if you're not just looking to jack off the porn, but you want to see some, like,
yeah, you want to watch an actual movie.
Yeah, there's, you know, go back to the heyday of the 90s or something. This stuff feels like an ancient relic. Like, I can't think of a lot of purpose to watch this. Like, and I dig, like, prison stories, but it just, honestly, there wasn't enough of a plot here.
It's so basic.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, to me, it's just not worth it.
The next film that we're going to talk about has a pretty thin plot too, I think, but you're gripped by the storytelling, I think, a little bit more than here. Like,
right. Well, and they're actual characters, right? They're not caricatures. And that is a problem, I think, with Caged Heat, is that, like, these are just, like, outlines of characters. Like, even the main character is just kind of an outline for a woman to do things. She's not an actual person, whereas in Brawl in Cell Block 99, like, the main character there is a character. The other, you know, the adversaries that he goes up against are, you know, they have personality.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to wrap this. I, you know, I guess I'll save my final thoughts. I'll let you go first. First off, is there anything that, like, I didn't touch on going over this that you
would? No, like, I think we hit everything. Like, we hit all the plot points. You know, we talked about how it looks, how it sounds, like, you know, the problems with maybe the what is out there publicly. So yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to add other than, you know, what I just said. It's a boring film.
Yeah.
You know, giving scores here, I'm going to go 4 out of 10.
All right. Yeah, to me, it's interesting as film history, but that's mostly due to its director, I think. Because Demme would go on to do much greater things than this. But I don't think that the Caged Heat holds up in its own right. Like, I think if it was directed by some nobody, I don't know why this would be remembered. I mean, I guess it's part of a, you know, a genre that had its moment, but, you know, for this supposedly being one of, like, the shining examples of the genre, I don't see myself wanting to dig much deeper into the women in prison films. I like stories of people in prison, but most of the ones I've seen are, like, violent dudes in prison, not whatever this was in the 60s and 70s. If you know a good one, you point me in the right direction.
I'm not sure I know a good one.
Okay. But I did not enjoy this for all the reasons we listed above, and I'm going even lower than you. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
Okay.
It's not a whole lot of point in checking it out. Our second film is Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Every once in a while, I see a man in that chair who could just as easily be on this side of the table.
That muscle's just for show. Helps me lift stuff.
Man, principle.
Relinquish it now.
You know the difference between right or wrong? And you have a moral compass. I knew before you told me that you got an American flag in your home, you probably got more than one. You're a patriot.
Tell me my business. I do things direct, and I have a system.
Won't last forever.
Minimum freedom.
I'm not going to tell you anything you want to hear, and prison will give me plenty of time to look at guys I don't like.
This is written and directed by S. Craig Zahler. It came out October 6, 2017. Budget of $4 million. Whopping box office of $79,000. It sits at 91% on Rotten Tomatoes and an IMDb of 7.2. So this is much, much later. This stars Vince Vaughn as Bradley, who we're introduced to on the day he gets laid off from being a mechanic and finds out that his wife has been cheating on him. It's kind of how we meet Bradley at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
He's a very kind of, well, one, I guess I should point out, I'm a fan of S. Craig Zahler's films. Like, I really like his writing, and I like how, I guess, you know, what are the trademarks of a Zahler film? I think interesting dialogue. I think he lets scenes play out longer than they should. And, you know, he's kind of interested in details.
Yes.
And then kind of shocking, explosive violence out of nowhere. Well, not maybe not always out of nowhere, but you sometimes, I think this is a good example of it, this movie. You're like, you start to get so into the story that you forget that the violence is coming. I mean, this, it's called Brawl in Cell Block 99, and I kind of forget that the brawl in Cell Block 99 happens because it takes its time. And then yes, when the violence happens, it's pretty shocking. I mean, if there's one thing, if you, you know, ask most people, the one thing about his films is the vibe. And I guess the other thing besides that is the fucking music in his movies, which is, it's really weird. This is another great example of it. It's kind of got this weird 70s soul music going, but, and, you know, it sounds like it's something from the 70s that maybe you've never heard of, but no, it's actually he's doing the music. I don't understand.
Okay. I thought it was like, you know, he just picked up some like old,
you thought it was real 70s music, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's weird. Like, I don't get it because it doesn't always fit, but it's like another signature on his movies. Like, you know, like it's one of like, I guess one of his signatures, you know, is like he likes to write his own music, and it's usually sounds like stuff that Vince Vaughn listens to when he's driving around in his car in this. Vaughn plays this like very direct, no bullshit kind of guy. We also learn early in the movie that he's like capable of like explosive violence, because when he goes home and he finds out his wife's been cheating, he like slowly destroys her car by hand.
The most ridiculous things.
Yeah. He go inside and he starts just like, it's slow and methodical though. It almost looks like he's really doing it, like just beating it, the window with the meat of his fist till it breaks, and doing the same thing, like smashing down on the rear view mirror and stuff. Like, but I think it's good, like establishing of who this character is, because if there's one thing you need to know about this guy, it's that he's capable of horrible violence. But he restrains himself early on. He tells his wife to go in and he just kills her car instead of killing her. And even though he's like kind of a no bullshit guy kind of guy, he's still kind of capable of the kind of poetic dialogue that Zahler will give his characters. Like there's a point early at the beginning when he's getting fired. I think it's when he's getting fired. Someone asks him how you're doing. He's like, south of okay, north of cancer. You know, yeah. It's like very able to distill something into like a very short piece of dialogue there. He gives his wife this speech about going to get gas station coffee and creamer, and how he always picks the wrong creamer. It's like this speech about the law of averages and how he never, like, odds are I should accidentally pick the one that I want, but I never do. Kind of about how, like, life is never going to give him the things that he wants, so he has to go get it. So then we fast forward 18 months later. He's like a successful drug runner. He's decided to, you know, clearly he like used to know some criminal underworld and he's gone back to it. But they have money now. Like, they were living in this little house, now they're living in this big house. He's clearly got money. And his boss wants him to go do a job with another crew. Vince Vaughn doesn't want to do it, mostly because he didn't like the other runners he has to work with. Like, he thinks the one guy, says the other guy is like using. I don't know if he meant like the guy's on steroids or if he's like using coke or whatever.
Right.
I'm not sure.
He doesn't trust them at all, though.
Yeah, but he like clearly sizes them up right away and realizes that they're fucking idiots. And it turns out that he's right on that, but. But he agrees to do it because his boss tells him he'll get 3 months paid leave after his baby's born. On the job. All right. So one thing I want to touch on, like, I think is really cool about his movies, like I said, is the details. Them going to get these drugs. I don't know if it's like in the ocean or what, or if it's a lake. I don't know what it's supposed to be. I'm assuming it's supposed to be the ocean, right? Like,
yeah, I think so.
But just the details of how they get the drugs in, I thought was super interesting. Like just like take this boat out to a spot and a guy scuba dives down to like the bottom of the ocean there. And the drugs are like in these chests that they chain down. So he just takes like these fucking bolt cutters, cuts the chain. The chest floats up. They open up. You see that there's like an inflatable inside there that was helping it float. And then their drugs are inside of that. Like, I don't know. I like the way Zoller will show these details and never really over explains things to you. And I think that's another thing I like, kind of like about the movie is his movies is like, not everything is explained. You're supposed to, like, yeah, he trusts you to figure it out. And in fact, I think that like Vince Vaughn's character is interesting because of that. Cause you're like, you don't know what to make of him at first.
Yeah,
like this guy that is he a racist?
Yeah,
is he a racist? Is he, you know, who is this guy? Like, do I like him or do I? There's actually a famous line of dialogue from Swingers that Vince Vaughn says where he's like, "I want you to be the guy in the rated R movie. The guy, you're not really sure what's going on with him. You're not sure if you like him yet. Like, that's kind of what he's playing here. You're like, I don't know what's up with this guy. Like." You never get his internal monologue of what he thinks. You have to watch him and figure out the calculations he's making in his head about the situation he's in. But anyways, so they go do this job and fucking cops show up. Actually, like, Vaughn feels it coming and he's like, throw the fucking drugs in the water, and they don't listen to him even after they agreed to do so.
Throw them in there. We'll come get them later. Like, if everything's all right. And obviously shit goes bad and they split up there. Like, Vaughn walks away. Like, Bradley walks back to the boat.
He's got this weird sense of duty because he goes back. Like,
yeah,
he could have walked away. Right. He's like these stupid assholes. But I think it was, he didn't like the idea of them using violence against the cops.
Well, and then probably if they're caught, they're going
to like,
implicate him too, which is weird because he takes them out.
Yeah. See, so he shows up out of, like, these guys are having a shootout with the police. Vaughn could have walked away, but he comes back and he kills one of them and takes the other one down. And then he ends up getting arrested and they're like, you know. So he ends up taking the fall, and he won't speak, he won't say anything. Great, like, interrogation scene with him and this cop. The cop I've seen in something else, too. I can't place it, but he's really good. But, you know, he's like, I'm not going to say nothing. And he thinks he's going to get 4 or 5 years, but the judge throws the book at him in this movie as well. He gets 7 years. And now we're, like, 45 minutes into the movie. And he's on the bus to the prison. So, like, this is what, about two hours, 10 minutes, something like that?
Yeah.
And you're almost an hour in before this really becomes a prison movie. On the bus to the prison is, like, another example of, like, the dialogue I really like from Zoller. The other guys on the bus, he's like, I wish we were going to some other prison. And Vince Vaughn says, you should aim higher with your wishes. I just kind of love that, like, simple and direct but kind of poetic dialogue. I think it's really neat. And then I'm super, like, once we get into the prison, I start to find the movie even more compelling because you're getting, like, the details of his prison life. And I, again, like you pointed out in your, I think your review on Letterboxd, it's like how much of this is realistic or not. I don't know, but some of it seems like it could be realistic. But what I like is that it's detailed and it's showing like this, the dehumanizing nature of prison, like in little small ways, like when he's getting processed.
I think actually the whole original, whatever that first prison he's in,
prison he goes to,
yeah, is actually probably, you know, seems fairly accurate. I don't particularly know, but
accurate or not, though, it's detailed, so it makes you believe that's how it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It seems realistic because he gives so much detail, and how everything works.
Like, there's this guy, you're getting processed, and you checked in, you're like giving up your rings or whatever, and the guy is just like a total government asshole. Like, you know, if you say anything to him, he makes you go over to the back of the line. When the guards do like the strip search of him, they're like raiding his dick. Like, just, I don't know. It's just like those little, like, details.
That to me, I'm not sure that, like, you, because they do it directly in front of Bradley.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that stuff wouldn't go on, but if it did, it would likely happen behind their back.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I've never been in prison. I hope I never get to find out. But they did give him a good rating. I think they gave him like A-. Yeah. Little things too. His shoes are too small. You know, they're making his feet all fucked up.
You know, like bloody and shit.
You know, this old guy that's been there a while, giving this prison orientation and just telling him little things like, you know, about how the food's awful, but you better eat it. You're gonna be hungry come the middle of the night, and you know, just, I don't know. I really, that's the thing I love about the prison movie, is just like getting this glimpse into this world that you hopefully will never know anything about.
Right.
So anyways, cause I want to like make this forever. But the other crew is mad at him and, for how the pickup went down. Because, you know, the one guy got killed, the other guy's in prison now. So they kidnap his wife in the middle of the night, and they have Udo Kier come visit him in prison. And, you know, like, you know, they're doing like the phone conversation through the glass window. And he basically, I love how he first greets him. He's like, "Remain calm. If you don't, I will leave, and you'll regret that departure for the rest of your life." And he basically tells Vince Vaughn that, you know, they have his wife. They, you know, there's somebody inside that they want killed, and it's his job to kill this person. And if he doesn't, they will give his wife an abortion.
It's like a special abortion, though. Like,
yeah, he specifically says several times.
Yeah, they're gonna cut the limbs off of his kid. Like, leave the kid alive, but cut his arms and legs off, and then deliver the unborn arms and legs to Bradley in jail.
Crazy fucked up. And if that wasn't enough, he's like, "Yeah, we'll kill your fucking wife too."
Yeah.
But the catch is, this is kind of what's like kind of hard to believe, even on, like, at least it stuck out to me more here on a repeated viewing, is like, all right, they want him to kill this guy, which, by the way, you find out is bullshit, but they want him to kill this guy, but in order to do so, like, the guy is, like, not even at the prison he's at. He's got to get transferred to another prison. It's like, okay, that's kind of a big ask of somebody who's in prison. Like,
yeah, and I don't think it works necessarily the way that, like, I mean, there's a lot of paperwork involved in transferring people.
Well, like, that's the thing, too, is he gets it done in, like, a day.
Yeah.
Like, so he's like, you need to get transferred to this other, like, this maximum security prison, Red Leaf, and there's this guy there I need you to kill. And so right away, as he's getting walked back to his cell, Vince Vaughn does the calculation in his head. You don't get any voiceover explaining it to you. You just have to figure it the fuck out. And he just starts attacking this fucking guard right after this guard just apologized for being a dick to him. He like takes off his shoe and he slaps him with it. He shoves the shoe in the guy's mouth, punches the shit out of him, and he gets him on the floor. And this is when we get our first moment of shocking violence, when you realize just like how far the violence will go in this movie. Because he breaks the dude's arm and the bone comes out.
Yeah.
And this has been a pretty quiet movie up until this point. And you're like talking, we're like, what, an hour, 10, hour, 15 minutes in. I just remember watching it with Melissa, and she's like super into the story at this point. When the bone came out of the guy's arm, she just started screaming, like howling, like, oh my God. Movie kind of slaps you in the face at this point, like, yo. In case you forgot, this is called Brawl in Cell Block 99. There's going to be horrible violence.
Yeah.
There's a cool line at this part, too. The other guards show up. They're like, you want some justice before we take him down? And Vince Vaughn says, I recommend he uses his right arm for that. What I like in this part, and then the fights and stuff to follow, is it's a very blunt, brutal kind of violence. Not very stylish. It's just people hitting each other as hard as they can. There's some choreography to it. Like, there's definitely a little bit of ballet to it, but it's very much just like, let's swing and hit. I don't know. I don't know about you. I don't know what you thought. Like, didn't remind me of fights and stuff that you see in a lot of other films.
No, it's very, you know, I think you said it's like blunt.
Brute force.
Yeah, like, it's not like, oh, let's get the best camera angle to show these punches, and it's just, you know, here's some dudes fighting, and it's going to be the most violent shit we can put on screen. Yeah, but it's also not, we're not prettying it up. Like, it's not like,
flashy. It's not. Yeah,
this isn't exciting.
I mean, I find some of it kind of, to be honest, but it's very
exciting in the traditional sense of like, oh, this is like, you know,
not flashy.
Yeah,
it's flashy in a different way. It's flashy in like, look at how fucking crazy violence actually is. He gets transferred to this Red Leaf fucking place, and he's met by the warden there, played by Don Johnson, who is just like chewing up scenery in this movie as he's chomping on a cigar. Red Leaf is much worse. You know, it's basically like parts of this look like just like a fucking medieval dungeon.
That's what I found. It's like a bit cartoonish.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's at this point, like shortly after he arrives there, I think, is when Vince Vaughn realizes just how fucked he is. The things that like he's being asked to do, he'll never get out of prison for. You know, drugs are one thing, but murdering people in prison probably adds a life sentence to your time.
Yeah.
Although, like, how bad his situation, I think, becomes more and more clear to him as it goes on, because as he's about to find out, there is no fucking whoever that he's looking for. They just wanted him at a prison with their people so that they could torture and kill him, which, strangely enough, I did not catch the first time I watched this movie. I was like, really? Watching this, I'm like, yeah, like, I thought he was still looking for this guy, but it becomes clear very early on.
Very quick. I mean, he yells out like whatever the dude's name is, and they're like, yeah, he don't exist. He's not here.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, like, he's kind of dragged down to again, like, this cartoonish villain lair where this guy who is, I mean, Eleazar, who is the guy who ran the other crew, he's also in prison because his people flipped on him.
Yeah.
Like, that's why he's there.
Bond got a pass. At least he didn't fucking say anything.
Right. Yeah. But so like because of the because Elazar's people suck and like got into a shootout with the cops and they flipped on him, like he has set up shop in Redleaf, like in this almost like Marlon Brando-ish kind of like castle in the basement. And they brought Bradley there to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, they just wanted to I think toy with him, torture him, eventually kill him. He gets down, so he has to get to a specific cell block there, too, cell block 99,
yeah.
And he finds out that's for like where the worst of the worst people go, so he right away picks a fight in the yard, and we get, I think is a fun, exciting, like, brawl between him and just these rando guys, but again, it's that same kind of, like, really blunt, brutal, like, brute force, like, punches someone as hard as you can, squeezing them to break the ribs. Like, very, again, very not flashy violence, I guess. He injures some of the guards, and then he gets thrown down in this fucking dungeon. Don Johnson tells him, you just lost your minimum freedom. You're going to 99. And he tells him, it's the prison within the prison. They put a shock belt on him, and this whole bit I love. It's like this big old fucking belt he has to wear around his back, kind of. And they'll, you know, if he misbehaves, he gets 5 points. Each one of those points is a shock. Don Johnson explains this all. He's like, you currently have 25 points, and which will distribute as you're eating, sleeping, pissing, like at the most inconvenient fucking time. And again, it's like just another one of those, like, I love the details that the Zoller kind of like wallows in. And I love what happens with this fucking belt. Anyways, yeah, so then the guards bring in to see this, the other crew, the guys from the other crew. And that's when we find out what you said. The other dude is in there. They're just there to toy with him. You know, I think they promise him like a long, slow payback for what he did. And if he hurts them, if he does anything to retaliate, the abortionists will suffer. Like, which, and that's the other crazy thing. So, like, what? They're, like, holding on to his wife indefinitely, forever?
Yeah.
To, as some, you know, because otherwise there's not a whole lot of leverage, because he doesn't seem to give a shit. But when he's back in his cell, he rips the insoles of his shoe out, and he puts them against his waist to block the shock belt. I love this bit. I don't know why, I thought it was a really cool detail. His neighbor across the way in this fucking hellhole he's in asks if his girl would have waited, if she's going to wait for him. And Bradley answers she would have. So that's the point when you know that he knows it's over.
Yeah.
And then we get the spectacular ending. I think... It takes, the movie takes a sweet-ass time, but when it reaches that ending, it's pretty fucking nuts. He, like, overpowers the guards, because they think they're shocking him and shit. They ain't doing shit. And he catches them off guard. He overpowers them. He gets their keys. He smashes one of the guy's heads in the fucking cell door, which is a really awesome moment. He's like, stupid asshole.
Yeah, specifically the guy that's, like, working with the crime lord in there. Like, he fucks him up.
But he didn't want to do it. He was just trying to hold him in the cell. The guy pushes against the door. He just slams the fucking cell door on his head. So then he goes to get his fucking revenge on these people. And it's like, the violence just gets turned up to 11. He, like, steps on this one guy's head and, like, drags it across the floor. Basically rips his face off. When he flips him over, you're like looking at his fucking skeleton. He pushes another guy's eyes in, and this is all practical effects. And if there's one flaw for me in rewatching it, is that I think that some of the practical effects actually look a little bad. I don't know if you noticed.
No, but that's also the first time I saw it. So it's like, oh fuck.
So like, I think the magic and the spell that the movie casts, especially the first time you're watching it, you just won't even notice because you're just so shocked by what's happening. I'm watching it on repeat. I'm like, some of the stuff, especially the final shot of the film, looks very fake. But anyways, he smashes another guy's face with his foot, like literally shatters his like face and his jaw. You see like his jaw come flying off. He corners the leader, or the, you know, the guy, the other guy. He says, you know, tells him to call it off, like, you know, call Udukir and tell him like let my life go. Guy tries to be tough about it, but he snaps his fucking leg backwards, and he agrees to it. And then he goes into like this hostage, like Vince Vaughn goes into this hostage standoff with the warden, like where he's got like I think one of the guards at least.
He has one of the guards, and he has Eleazar. Well, yeah, he has Eleazar. And the warden thinks he has both guards because he wouldn't know any better.
Thank you for straightening that out. And yeah, he says, you know, I'm waiting on a call, and 1 minute after I'm done with that call, I'll hand myself over. He's basically waiting to hear that his wife has been freed. Then we cut to, like, we get to see that his wife being dropped off at his boss's house, his boss Gil's house. And pretty cool moment with his wife, played by Jennifer Carpenter, where they're like backing out of the driveway and his boss like shoots at their car and like I think maybe kills, I don't know, he kills one of them.
He kills the driver who
He kills the driver, and then she's like, give me the gun. She takes the gun, like the sniper rifle, from him, and she gets the abortionist as he's running out of the car.
Yeah,
I thought it was a really cool, like, giving her a moment of agency in this. She calls him. They say they're got goodbyes and this and that. He doesn't tell her it's goodbye. But he knows he's fucked and he's done for. But you know, get a nice little scene with them two talking on the phone. She holds the phone up to her belly so you can say, you know, he says goodbye to his unborn child. He hangs up, and I think John Johnson's like, you ready? And he's like, I still have that 1 minute I told you about, because you said 1 minute after I hang up. And then he goes in the inside, and he fucking executes Eleazar like he said he would. Like, he actually threatened him earlier, like, saying, I'm going to tear your fucking head off. He, like, shoves his dude's head into the fucking piss hole that he has in his cell, and he kicks it down into the shithole. He says, they say the head stays alive for a while after it's cut off. I hope so. And then you get the end of the movie, which is they just come in and blow fucking Vince Vaughn's head off, and it cuts the credits right as his head's exploding. I think one of the great endings I've ever seen, because I just love that the final shot is just literally Vince Vaughn's head exploding. But, I mean, you tell me, I like watching it this time, I was like, oh my god, it just looks like a dummy. I mean, all practical and, gore effects have that, but yeah, this is like really, really, really like, part of it is probably sort of homage to the old gore effects, but
yeah, I mean, boy, he looked a little fake. It didn't like stick out to me, but
well, see, I do remember the first time I saw the movie, it didn't stick out to me at all, because like I was just not expecting that. Like, I was not expecting that was to be how the movie ended, and I was just so amazed that ending was that cool. Like, it just like, and it happened so quick, it's like literally a fraction of a second. But you know, watching it closely here on rewatch, I did notice it's a dummy. And the dummy doesn't particularly look like Vince Vaughn at all. He almost looks like Will Forte or something more. But anyways, that's the movie. I went a little bit longer on this, so you could probably tell I like this movie. I want to hear some more of your thoughts on it now that we've ran through it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it's very well made. I think that you went into a lot of detail about Zoller's detailing.
Yeah,
And it is there. I think you mentioned it earlier as well, like where maybe he lets scenes go on a little too long.
Yeah.
And I feel like I felt that here and with the previous movie that I watched of his,
Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk. And yeah, like that one just suffers from like the fact I don't like Westerns in general.
Yeah. So,
This one worked a little bit better for me, just simply because, like, you know, like the setting a whole lot more.
Yeah. And
Bond's performance is fantastic.
Bond is great in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I it goes from this, like, very kind of serious kind of feel to everything. And then when he gets the red leaf, it's just like, we're going straight up cartoon villain. And that was a little jarring, but once you settle in, like, that ending, the whole stuff, everything that happens in Red Leaf is super satisfying. And, yeah. You know, it takes away any of the, you know, this doesn't necessarily mesh quite well with me. Like, it delivers on what it sets out to do. Simple story, like, very simple.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you know, it's not groundbreaking in any way, really. Like, this is, you know, criminal entices, good guy, and say good guy in quotes here, but, like, you know, he's out to get the good guy, and the good guy is gonna, you know, fight back. And the ending, I think, is what it separates it from those other types of, you saw a lot of these in, like, the 80s.
Yeah.
I think what separates it, though, is that ending where, generally there's kind of like a happy ending where, oh yes, we all understand what Bradley was doing, and we're now going to let him go, or, like, 20 years have passed and he can go and he meets his son or whatever. And here it's just like, no, like, he's dead.
He's stuck in the machine and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think that Zoller lets scenes go on too long. So there's a scene early on in this, when he goes back home after he gets fired.
Yeah.
He's just sitting parked on the street, and it kind of goes on. You're just like, there's nothing happening here. He's just sitting there staring. If you think that, like, that's a great example of Zoller letting the scene go on too long, yeah, which I actually kind of dig. Because it lets you, like, wallow in a moment and start to, like, think about it. He does this way, way worse than Dragged Across Concrete, which is 3 hours long.
This, like, at 2 hours and 10 minutes, I don't think it ever felt long, but it, you know, there are things that I could definitely see you could edit a little bit, but
if the big studio was behind this, it would be at least 20 minutes shorter.
Yeah. And I mean, this is his flair. Like, this is how he does things, and it's kind of his style.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily always work for me. But I think, you know, this is a satisfying movie. It's a weird thing to say about it, but
it is, though. It's fun.
It feels satisfying.
It's a fun, pulpy crime movie with some really brutal violence.
Yeah.
But yeah, in Dragged Across Concrete, there's a scene with Vince Vaughn in a car eating a sandwich, and you watch him eat the entire sandwich. Yeah. It's like 3 minutes long. Nothing happens. Anyways, I guess you gave your kind of final thoughts, rating.
Yeah, I'm going to go 7 out of 10 here. I liked it.
To me, I kind of already said everything I like about this film, as well as Zoller in general. I think that this is kind of the peak, you know, Zoller's only done 3 films, and for me, this is, like, the peak of what he's done. I like all 3 of his films. I actually really recommend Dragged Across Concrete 2, but that is, again, it's 3 hours. This is, you know, more normal length, and I think if you're into genre films, like, if you're into, like, the prison films and revenge movies and, you know, action violence type shit, you're gonna dig this, I think. And for me, for all the reasons I listed above, again, I think a lot of it is the fact that Zoller doesn't over-explain things to you, and it's just really fun dialogue. To me, this is damn near perfect. It doesn't get much better than this. So I give this one a 9 out of 10.
Nice.
And I'm assuming then that both of us kind of choose Brawl over Cage Heat. This is kind of a foregone conclusion.
Yes.
I think the polling went the same way. I think, you know, I think Cage Heat got like 25% of the vote, but that was with only 4 votes. So every other vote went to Brawl. So easy win for Brawl and Solid Block 99, but didn't even feel like a fair fight to me. But I do. It was fun for me, at least, to revisit this. I'm happy I got to show you this movie finally. So at least there was one, like, 50% of a fun episode here. KG, yeah. I hated.
Not a film I will ever revisit.
Before we move in on to, I guess there's one more thing I want to touch on. Before we move on to what you have for next month, month's episode, what do you think of Zoller's politics? Because that's something that a lot of people assume he's a right-wing filmmaker. It's something I've put a lot of thought into. I don't even know if you noticed or thought anything of that one way or another.
I've heard that about Zoller.
It's much more evident in Dragged Across Concrete.
Yeah, and that was the film that that was where I first heard kind of about his politics. Because I don't think Bone Tomahawk really has much in the way. I mean, you know, there's portrayal of Native Americans or whatever, but I don't think that's really a political statement that he was making there. And I don't think Brawl and Cellblock 99 has any political statement, like, outside of, hey, some prisons suck.
Yeah.
Which I mean, it's just a generalized statement. Like,
Zoller won't discuss his politics. He's never, if he's asked about it, he beats around the question, and he says, and I agree with him, and I think he's right. He's like, I'm not writing politics, I'm writing characters. He's like, so if a character's right wing, I'm going to write them as that, but I'm not interested in my films giving some sort of, like, political statement. And I think that's true. And so I think when people look at Dragged Across Concrete, they assume it's a right-wing film. It's because he wrote the cop characters well, you know? I don't think he necessarily... I mean, there's things in this.
So I will say he also wrote... This is very fucking weird. He wrote the last Puppet Master movie.
Which was about taking out Nazis or something, right?
Yeah. The puppets are, you know, they're Nazis.
Yeah.
So, weird. Like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's ultimately comes down to, I don't really care what his politics are, and I don't think that he's not the type of writer that's trying to write to that. He's trying to write characters, you know. I think there's things in this, like, there's weird things in this early on where, like, anytime Vince Vaughn is at, like, a red light, he's, like, looking over at the minority characters, like, disapprovingly or, like, disgustingly at them. But I don't know. Then there's other scenes where, like,
he gets along fine with his boss, and he gets along fine with the kind of the older guy that introducing him to the jail. Like, I mean, I don't know. It felt natural when, you know, you don't want to. These guys pull up next to him, and he kind of just, like, looks over at them, and he just looks menacing in this film by itself.
So
I'm not sure if that there was any intention there.
The things that I could point to, I would say not, like, right. Like, there's a part where his boss says the N-word, and he's like, I don't know the right way to say that. Is it with the hard R, or are you supposed to do it with the A?
I don't think you could ever say that.
Vince Vaughn's like, I don't think someone who looks like you can say that word anyway polite.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of it. I just thought I'd ask you because it's something that, like, has definitely come up, and I'm like, to me, I'm interested, but I'm also, I think that's not what's interesting about his movies. So,
I mean, and if anything, the coming out of this, like, his the character work that he does here with Bradley is great. Like, he has a full character, and you are invested in his story all the way through. Unlike Caged Heat, which had no characters.
Exactly. All right, so it's an easy win for Brawl and Cell at Block 99, but it was at least fun to watch that one. What are we doing next month?
All right, so you were like, oh, we're doing prison movies.
Right.
And that got me, like, that got me wanting to watch one of my favorite action movies of all time. Ooh. The Rock.
All right.
Which is it's a Michael Bay movie from 1996 starring, why am I now drawing a blank on Nicolas Cage, Nicolas Cage and, Sean Connery. And then I was like, all right, you know what? we're doing action movies now kind of over here. I'm going to hold that and see what I compare that with. And I was like, let's see what we can do with Alcatraz. Turns out not much. There was one, a Clint Eastwood movie from 1979.
Oh, you're going to say that.
Escape from Alcatraz. And I thought about that for a second, but then I came across one I haven't watched. I've not seen. It's called The Enforcer, which is the third Dirty Harry movie.
Okay.
Takes place in San Francisco, same location as The Rock. Same sort of concept. Terrorists kind of taking over, you know, in the city.
You said you haven't seen The Enforcer?
I've not seen The Enforcer.
Okay.
So I thought that would be a good time to see it. It's actually the only Dirty Harry movie I've ever seen is the first one.
Okay.
Let's pair The Enforcer with The Rock. They're 20 years apart.
And we're doing like two San Francisco terrorists.
Yeah, San Francisco movies. Terrorists. not sure if they're like. I'm not sure if you consider Dirty Harry an action movie.
Yeah.
But yeah. So two San Francisco terrorist action films, and they probably are going to be super different.
Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't seen all. I saw all those Dirty Harry movies when I was a kid. I actually revisited the fourth one. You said this is the third one, right?
It's the third one, yeah.
I revisited the fourth one over last summer.
Sudden Impact.
Yeah.
Which is that comes out like 7 years after this, which is crazy. Like,
yeah, and that is a interesting, weird one. I know I've seen The Enforcer. I haven't seen it in a long, long time. I saw them all when I was kids. I haven't seen The Rock since it came out either. I remember loving it. So it's going to be a fun episode. I'm enjoying, like, you know, branching out a little bit with
genre stuff. Back to horror.
Right? Oh, yeah.
It's eventually. It's fun. Like, there's so much more we can do.
Yeah.
With like, there's so many different alleys of action as well, including horror. That we can add in here. So
I mean, I think fun. I think you see the connections in the stuff I chose this month. I mean,
for sure.
Brawl has
there's gore,
horror level gore. So, and just, you know, playing around in the genre sandbox is fun. I think, like, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say people that are into horror would enjoy Brawl and Cell Block 99. So. I'm more than happy to veer into action films. In fact, there will be more action films this year. So,
all right. Well, next up for February, The Enforcer from 1976 and The Rock from 1996.
Did not know that's that old. All right, cool. It'll be fun.